I want to begin this morning with a question that I want to answer at the end of the sermon. But I want to ask it at the beginning to hopefully discourage everyone from leaving in the middle of the sermon, or, judging from this morning, from making any calls on your cell phone while I'm still talking. And here's the question. When we read in the Amidah and elsewhere about God, God is called the God of whom? What people? What's Abraham already a call? Turn your cell phone off. Thank you. Right. The God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Right? Here's my question. Who is the most important figure in the Bible? Moses. So why does he never once say the God of Moses? We hear Torat Moshe, the Torah of Moses, but nowhere, trust me, nowhere in our prayers, nowhere in our liturgy, does it ever say the God of Moses. Why not? Now, in order, I think, to answer this question, we have to talk about what happens this morning in the Parsha, which is that the Israelites, for the first time, are on their way to being free. And everybody is in favor of freedom. And we think it is a wonderful thing that the Israelites are liberated from Egypt and they will be free. But we also know that absolute freedom, complete freedom, is impossible. There are always constraints, there are always limits on what we can do. And in fact, I would argue that a lot of the limits are limits we choose, and we choose them for a good reason. Let's think about it this way. We live in a society in which there are lots of things that are taken care of for us. You need to buy a car, somebody made a car. You need paper to write a sermon on, somewhere, somebody's manufacturing paper, so that you can pick up a copy, pick up a sheaf, and write your sermon. Now, how does it happen that all these people are taking care of you? It's because in a capitalist system, in a system where people are out to make a profit from what they do, you develop what one theoretician of capitalism named George Gilder called capitalist empathy. That is, in order to be a good capitalist, you have to have a certain understanding of how other people work. If you don't know how other people work, you can't make a product that they will want to buy. I don't know about you, but I've been hearing an awful lot about the launch of the new Microsoft program called Vista, which is going to be now on all the computers that Microsoft will sell, and that anybody else will sell, except for Apple. And what do they keep saying? We've made this more user-friendly, which is another way of saying we understand what people want and we're trying to give it to them. So in a capitalist system, the answer to the question of how do your needs get taken care of is somebody somewhere is going to manufacture something that will take care of your needs. In fact, a great economist, Milton Friedman, passed away this week. A great human being, even by those who didn't like his economic theory. And if you don't believe me, just read Paul Krugman in the New York Review of Books, who disagrees with Milton Friedman about everything, but ends his review by saying that he was a great human being and maybe the best popular explainer of economics who ever lived. And Friedman's basic idea was that corporations have no moral responsibilities at all except to make money. That's what corporations are supposed to do. They're not supposed to be environmentally conscious. They're not supposed to care about human beings. They're just supposed to make money. And by doing that, they will fulfill the needs of the society. So that's how capitalism does it. Of course, as you know and I know, there's a problem. which is, if it's not profitable to take care of your needs, then they won't get taken care of. If that's the only criteria you have, which is why doctors don't make house calls. Doctors made house calls when there was a very, very small community and everybody knew everybody, and if you didn't make a house call, everybody would say, how come you're not making a house call? But now, when we're all spread out and things are much more complicated and you have to have a much larger patient load, doctors can't afford to go from house to house to house any more than lawyers can or other professionals. And so what happens is some of our needs don't get met by people that we pay to meet our needs. And you realize that paying someone isn't sufficient. You can pay a nanny to take care of your child, but you know what? The day that you stop paying, or the nanny decides to find a different job, or decides she no longer needs the job, she's going to leave. And then what do? You call your sister. Because your sister's relationship is different than the nanny's. And you realize that we limit our freedoms by creating voluntary groups of friends and family, because that's the only way that we can survive. I will obligate myself to a friend and my friend to me, which is a limit on our freedom, because we know that nobody can live with freedom alone. That we need each other. And that without that, nobody can survive. And not only that, but that certain bonds are more powerful not only than economic bonds, we know that, right? It doesn't matter how much you think your nanny, your cook, your psychiatrist, your doctor, whomever, no matter how much you think they're close to you, if tomorrow they take another job, they're going to be distant. So we know that certain bonds are more powerful than bonds of economics, even than bonds of self-interest. And those are moral bonds, bonds of morality, things that tie us together ethically and communally. My friend Joseph Telushkin is fond of pointing out that he knows a lot of people who keep kosher and a lot of people who try to lose weight. He said, and here's an interesting thing. The people who try to lose weight, they still eat stuff they know they're not supposed to. They know it's bad. They know it's not good for their health. They know they shouldn't do it, but just get one more piece of cake. But he says those same people would never, ever touch pork. Why? Why can they say no to one thing and they can't say no to the other, even though it's in their self-interest? The pork won't make them sick. The cake will. They'll eat the cake and leave the pork. Because, he says, bonds of ethics and belief are more powerful even than bonds of self-interest, which is why you will go against your self-interest sometimes to take care of those who are closest to you, those you really care about. You will limit your freedom to have a community. Because community is more powerful, because you can't enjoy your freedom if you're not taken care of. That's what it means to have a community. And I want to tell you, sometimes we don't realize in the Jewish community how powerful our community is, but it was brought home to me this year when friends of mine called me who are not Jewish, and they had a parent who was very sick. And since I am Jewish, we're always talking about doctors, because that's what Jews do. Right? Jews always talk about doctors, and Jews always know the best doctors. I know the best person in this field, right? Every Jew knows the best person in this field. So she called and she said, do you know who my father should go see? So my wife and I made this recommendation and that recommendation, and then we called and we followed up and we called other people and other people called other people. And 3 weeks later, a month later, they came over for dinner and they said, you know, we've heard you talk about this community thing, but we had no idea what it was all about. We're surrounded now by 20 people who call us every single day and ask us how we're doing and send us to more and more people. We've never seen anything like this. And the strange thing is, for us, that's what we do. It's normal. That's community. That's the way we tie each other to one another, and we don't think of it as a loss of freedom, though it is. We think of it as enabling us to live, which it does. And that admission that freedom only goes so far and that community has a right to impinge on your freedom, that's exactly what we have and what America needs. You know, a sociologist several years ago, Robert Putnam at Harvard, made a big splash by writing this article called Bowling Alone. And there were all sorts of sermons that were devoted to bowling alone. It was about the decline of bowling leagues in America. Because, he said, it used to be that people would get together in little communities and they would have bowling leagues and they would have card clubs and they would have reading groups, and they're not doing that anymore. Community is falling apart. But we still have it. This is still community. And even though it makes demands on us, it is the only way that you can move through the desert. Because when God liberated the Israelites from Egypt, God didn't do it as the God of Moses. The reason God was the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is because there was no community yet. There were only individuals. But once there was a people, God was no longer the God of individuals. And that's the answer. That's why God isn't the God of Moses, because God is the God of Israel. No longer the God of one person, but the God of a whole people. That's why Israel moved through the wilderness as a community, not as individuals. That's why you and I both know that any day of the week, if you want to lose a child, don't do it at the supermarket and be scared. Do it at the synagogue and you know they'll be safe. You see kids running around here all the time. Do you ever say, oh my God, where are their parents? They're in trouble. No, because they're in the community. Because there are certain places where we draw together and we take care of one another. And we know that we'll be all right. And as much as we celebrate the idea of freedom, we have to remember that freedom only works if somebody else is also watching out for you. That we're liberated not only as individuals, but as a people to take care of each other, that we are a network, or better, we are a necklace of shining stones. Everybody an individual, but everybody tied together. And on this day, on Tu Bishvat, how much more do we realize that? Doesn't matter how much you say you're free and you're an individual, we are all connected to one another, not only in community, but globally. And what happens to this earth happens to every one of us. That's why, no God of Moses, only God of Israel. When you look around, you probably don't know everyone in this room, but they're your community. When you're in trouble, they're the people who will care. When you need them, remarkably enough, sometimes when you know them and sometimes when you don't, they're the ones who'll be there. That's what it means to travel out of Egypt as Klal Yisrael. That's what it means when the rabbis say, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebazeh, all of Israel is responsible for one another. That our freedom is shaped and moderated by our tied togetherness. The Jews didn't leave Egypt to wander alone. They wandered together, and we have been wandering ever since, traveling together, caring for one another, remembering what Rabbi Akiva taught was the most important verse of the Torah. V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, that you should love the other, your friend, your neighbor, as yourself. And the rabbis say, why? Ahavta l'reacha, you should love the other because kamocha, because the other person is like you. Because as much as we put artificial divisions between ourselves and others, that person doesn't dress like me, doesn't look like me, doesn't watch the same things I do, yet kamocha, at bottom, he, she is like you. Each of us. We are part of each other. And while that limits our freedom, it enhances our lives and it brightens each blessed day. So we should be glad and grateful that there is no God of Moses. Because instead, we are all tied together by the God of Israel. And in times of joy, and in times of grief, we are responsible for one another. Grateful to be free, and appreciative that our freedom is not the kind that tears us apart, but that gives us the latitude and the wisdom to tie ourselves one to the other so that we can wander together as we search in our lives and with our souls for the promised land where we will still need each other, but we will no longer need to be afraid. Shabbat Shalom.